Ah, ok. Men den høres som jeg står. Eller jeg nødt til å stå og
oppdra. Ja, vi kan pause det. Jeg tror det skal gå og
greit. Fordi jeg pleier å være litt sånn rundt omkring.
Men hvis du står her, da.
Ja.
I'm busy now with
test.
Hallo.
Ja. Men jeg kan jo prøve å stå litt i nærheten her.
Ja da.
Ja da, det der.
There is a break, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, I can make it. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Of course, after.
Yes, morning.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
The heck to wake up. Okay. We continue our journey. Today is this medical imaging or call it in capsule. Another colleague from the Color Lab, Paul Anders, who is a researcher at the Color Lab, and yeah, you're kind of an expert in capsule endoscopy, isn't it?
Yeah, mostly, that's what
yeah.
I think.
So,
from the image processing side.
Yes. So I'm very happy to hear your research related to that topic, and yes, floor is yours.
Okay, thanks. So hello, my name is, as you already heard, Paul Anders Fruhl. So I'm doing research, among other things, in capsule endoscopy. It's related to image processing and 3D reconstruction and those sort of things, but also there are some color-related issues involved in there, and those are what I will talk about today. So, first and foremost, I try to relate it back to the curriculum of the course. So I will touch upon, not cover them entirely, but touch upon these two topics marked in yellow here, color management, device characterization, and color and image processing. So hopefully if I do my job, then you will have learned those things after I'm done. The importance of color in endoscopic investigations. The problem of color standardization in endoscopy applications. How to process capsule endoscopic images, correcting or conserving colors. And how to assess color reconstruction in processed capsule endoscopy images. These are the main things that this lecture will include. So it's divided into many things. So this is the outline. I will just start by introducing what endoscopy and capsule endoscopy is. Some of you may not know that. And then I will talk about the importance of color in this field. And then on standardization for endoscopy applications. I will talk about some color correction methods and give some examples of enhancement techniques that preserve color, as well as some ways of reconstructing images with higher density. And then a very important part of this is subjective assessment, because this is mostly the only way that you per day can check whether or not your results are good enough or not when you do some sort of processing. And in the end, if I have time, I will talk about some coloring 3D reconstruction, which is based on capsule endoscopy images.
Okay, so I'll just start to talk about the
medical procedure, endoscopy and capsule endoscopy. Now, there are several methods used for screening, so that you can sort of check yourself out if you have some symptoms, or even if you don't have, to do a preventive sort of screening. It's a very important way of discovering whether something or not is wrong with your digestive system. So you can basically, at least if you talk about the stomach
or the bowel or the colon, you can reach it from outside with a flexible tube.
So it's basically a flexible tube. You see magnified up the end of it there up to the right, where you have a video camera, some lighting, and you have an instrumentation channel, so you can do certain procedures. And the good thing about this is that you get high resolution images, you get high frame rates, you can control the places you look at and so on and so forth, so you can go really into specific places and see if things are okay.
A typical scope view is shown over to the right there.
The drawbacks with this is, first and foremost, now I haven't drawn it in here,
it's very hard to reach the small intestine, which is sort of located between the stomach and the colon.
Another thing is that people don't want to go through this for no reason. It's not very pleasant. So, you know, people don't go and screen themselves before they have clear symptoms, and usually when you have clear symptoms, it's too late in some cases, at least if it's something more serious. So it's encouraged to do this, but then people don't do it, and
that's understandable. There's other ways that may have a lower threshold for screening, but and can also reach the small intestine,
are these pills. It's a pill-sized camera. I brought one here for just a slight demonstration. So you have, it's a rather large pill, but it's possible to swallow, and it has light sources and cameras inside. You see a dissection of one prototype over there, so there's a lot to cramp into this little thing. You need the light and the camera, of course, but you need the processing, you need the transmission device, you need batteries, which is occupying a lot of space, because this thing, when you swallow it, it can take up to 24 hours from you swallow it until it passes through your system. Usually the areas of interest takes about 8 hours, but then again, it's quite a lot of energy that's used over time for this this thing, so one has to be careful on how to construct it. So there are different, this is the one I've shown, you also have different other configurations of this thing. So the good thing about this is it's a lower threshold for getting yourself screened. All you need to do is to swallow this thing, and then you have to wear a belt for while it's traveling through your system, because this belt will receive the video. So this, of course, has to transmit. You can't store the whole video in this pill, so it has to transmit it to the outside. Then you need some sort of reception device. But that's it. So people will rather choose this than the classical procedure. And the drawback, of course, is that it's miniature, so you usually suffer from significantly lower resolution and lower frame rates. And therefore, currently, unless you're going to screen your small intestine, this pill is usually something that complements the classical approaches, just to check something out. So it's not good enough for screening for example, large intestines, where usually most of the serious things happen.
Another problem is...
No,
it varies. So on average, 4. I've seen higher numbers too.
It
depends on the pill type and vendor, and it's getting better. But it can vary between just 1 to maybe 30. Now they actually have these pills that will, in a sense, adjust their frame rate based on how fast the pill moves. So if it moves slowly, you crank down the frame rate. If it moves fast, you can crank it up, which is a way of
Because if it would transmit 30 frames per second all the time, it would be a lot of data and a lot of wasted energy. So.
And you have one camera, or you have two on both ends?
Well, here you have one on both ends, same as I have here. Here you have it on the side. I haven't seen anyone that has both on the side and then, but that's probably because you have to get space for all the other things. Batteries is really taking a lot of space, so you need to, yeah. And you have those who are just one, which is usually used for the small bath. So you have other stands as well. You have this sphere with cameras all around, but I don't think that's been approved for clinical use yet. Yeah.
So because of that low resolution, is it used in clinical practice or just for research?
No, it's used in practice, yeah. But as I said, it's complementing things. For the small bowel, it is the best thing you can have because it's very hard to reach it from outside. But then again, the small bowel is usually where you get the problems is in the colon. That's where most diseases emerge, but also in the stomach. And there this, due to the size, this pill may tumble and move fast, and you will definitely lose certain areas. So therefore, it's still not up to speed for replacing anything in that matter. And of course, when you when you use them for screening, of course, you would like to make sure that you capture every part there is. But there's ways around it. Which I will talk about a little bit later. And the transmission they use now is in the megahertz range with a relatively narrow band of transmission, but you can move this into other frequency areas and then get a much wider bandwidth. Then you can actually crank up the data rate without killing the battery or actually not using any more energy at all. But that's not yet in any of these prototypes, but it's a possibility for future. And then you may get higher resolution and frame rates. So I guess in the future it will change. At least I think that's the intention. So any more questions on this side before I move on to the color?
What about the food? For example, somebody swallowed the pill and then ate something?
That's a caveat. I didn't mention. You have to clean your system. So you shouldn't eat for some hours. I'm not sure. Usually you're asked to not eat from the night before and breakfast and those sort of things, and then try to. But I mean, you have to clean your system with the other procedure as well. So it's still more pleasant because swallowing is easier than getting on the table with the doctors checking you out. So. Any questions? So, this is about color, so that's what I'll start to talk about now. Now you've seen what this equipment is. All sort of pathologies, polyvagal bleedings, things that happen in the intestine is more easily identified when you see things in color, because color changes is usually one of the early things you can detect. It's not always that way, but quite so often it is. True colors reveal many useful features, and that's usually what you have in these devices. But you also have other sort of color techniques, like filtered narrowband, where certain frequencies will better show blood veins or deeper tissues and those sort of things. That's an alternative. I will not touch upon those today because I'm going to concentrate on field cam, where I don't think you have those techniques. Main reason being that if you also have low resolution, what you may gain from these other imaging techniques may not be that much. But the preference of color also depends on the habit of the doctors because, most of them are used to looking in true colors, but some may be experts on field and narrowband and other things. What the doctors usually don't like is to see colors they don't expect because they will use them to assess and they've been trained to evaluate images based on knowledge. And this may even be a problem if you try to make the colors look better because they're used to one set. I'll get back to that later. But here's an example of an endoscopy image with a nasty tumor.
growing out. But as you can see, now this is not the best image, but and it's blown up very much. But the quality should at least be quite nice, and you should be able to see a lot of details much better than you do in this particular compressed image. And you can clearly see that there are significant color changes where you have the tumor. This will also be detectable in the early stage.
That is now an image where you have applied certain image processing already.
Yes, I mean this is downloaded from a colonoscopic database.
Okay.
So this is by far not a raw file. It's probably compressed to put it online and those sort of things. So it's already things that shouldn't be there. They look much better in practice if you see them on the screen they have in the operating room. But then of course you can also have pretty nice illumination in here. You don't have any energy limitations, so. Therefore, it gets clearer. If you look at the pill cam, it's a different story. Newer pill cams may be better than this. Also, here you have the problem that these have been compressed. In fact, you don't have any raw file available for these things because the vendors don't give them out. But so all you get is these processed images that comes out in the end of the imaging chain. But as you can see, the quality is significantly worse. The lighting is pretty dim, uneven. But still, I mean, color helps if you see the tumor over there. Which, if you know, this weren't in color, it would have been harder to see. Of course, the trained eye would, but it's appearing much, much more clearly when you study the color. So it's important not to change these things. If this was a small inflammation in the wall, that little color change may be smaller and much, much less. I'll show an image later on how this can blend in with the background, but you can actually enhance it by some contrast enhancement methods. And another thing to note here already is that when you process colors in this image, you don't really see all the colors you do out in the natural image, right? You don't have much green in here, for example. Except for the mixtures you get in towards the orange, but no pure green color. So you basically have a subset of colors, or a sub-gamut of what you would usually have, and that you have to take into account when you process these things, so the result gets wrong. Any questions on this before I move into standardization? Okay. So standardization in this field is quite difficult, as I will explain why. There was this report from the 2015 Summit of Color in Medical Imaging that sort of summarizes what they've done in standardization when it comes to medical imaging in general and the problems surrounding getting any standardization. Well, it's not very common to have that in many medical imaging applications. But the point is, if you want a high level of image fidelity, you need a well-defined framework for transfer of color, right, to make sure that you are within certain standards or in certain thresholds. As I'll explain, it's not very straightforward in this part of the application. But two aspects I usually consider here to look at quality is color accuracy, which refers to a system's ability to produce exact color matches between input and output. So if you have an input image, the original, and you have an output image, you try to minimize the error between them in the sense of color. That's usually quite difficult because it's very seldom that you have the original seen. For example, in the procedures I just talked about, you usually see it through the camera, right? It's not so easy to open someone up and look at it in a controlled lighting environment. But there's ways around it, as I will show a bit later. So usually they fall on consistency, which is basically the ability to reproduce the same result in a human interpreter. And I assume they have learned in this course and others that the response in the human interpreter is it can be quite diverse. It's far away from being just a measure of you know, minimizing some sort of error function. It's a lot of things playing into account. But this concept is most important for
for a medical application, because it's doctors that's going to look at it in the first place, at least the way it is now. So it's how they interpret it that matters. But of course, there's a lot of what we call, from information, the irrelevancy in this compared to accuracy, because there will be things that, if you have a very accurate system, there will be things that the human interpreter can't see, and these are usually irrelevant things. They could also be used, of course, to take away data that you wouldn't need in the first place, by, for example, compression. Yeah, but for now it's consistency, but we see more and more techniques coming that try to do the detection of diseases automatically using, for, you know, machine learning, for example, and particularly deep learning, and then, you know, what sort of perception. I don't really think you can talk about perception at all. Then things become much more different. Then maybe accuracy is much more important in that case, so it shouldn't be ruled out.
So when you talk about the aspects, then it is also related to different vendors or different technologies.
Yeah. So this is a problem. That's one of the problems with the...
This is a crucial point.
Yeah.
So that the data interpretation is a kind of the same across different vendors or...
Exactly. But as I mean... As it's hard to obtain this, then usually you end up checking it with doctors. Everything you do, every system you make, you put up... trials with doctors, and then they approve or they don't approve, which is of course a very lengthy procedure, but it's the best we have now. So to put up a standardization framework, you need to review the whole imaging chain, and for pill cams that's not necessarily simple. First of all, was to start up with the object, which is the intestines or the intestinal walls. You have the illumination, which is not even, as we saw. You have detector, in this case the camera sensor. You have some intermediate video files. You have some video processing, some displays, and human reader. All these things comes into play in the imaging chain. And for pill cams particularly, these things may come from different vendors. Usually what comes from the same is the pill and the reading device, the receiver, as well as a processing device that sort of which you download the video files from. But already a lot of things happen there. Then you have the storage device that you doctor may have, and their computers and their screens and their ability to read images, which is not coming from the same vendor, right? In a sense, I don't know which vendor the doctor comes from, but anyways, it's you know, there are many things that plays in here. And for having any color standardization, you need a characterization of input and output. Relations of all the components in the image that has to be well defined, otherwise you have really nothing to work on. So, but it's very important, as Peter just mentioned, that you would know in this case, because if you buy something from a different vendor, you know that it's up to standard. So you have interoperability. But there's lots of difficulties.
I mentioned some already. The first one, as you see in the image to the right there, is that these pills, they don't even emit light evenly. And also this is the case with colonoscopy, so you get sort of images over there. The colors are varying across the scene even before you capture it. So you have problems with reproducibility already there.
However, as I will show later, you may actually circumvent this if you have a depth model.
But that's if you have a depth model, that's not necessarily easy to obtain. There's secrecy around the composition of devices, so the vendors are not really eager to tell how their system works or within what thresholds. They would rather just deliver it to you. Tested it with doctors, and they say it's okay with whatever equipment they used when they tested it. So, of course, if you want to get to any sort of standardization, you have to communicate with them and make them reveal something that will probably be under, you know, some confidentiality, etc., etc. And the design goal currently is more towards the user preference of the doctor rather than actually a nice reproducibility. There can be some
deviations in color without doctors caring. As I mentioned, it more depends on their habit, what they've been used to seeing, rather than what is exact. So it may not matter that much, but there's many advantages in starting this anyway. So it's not feasible to determine the original scene. It's a problem to get color accuracy because, as I said earlier, you cannot just open someone up and look at them in controlled lighting. However, you have color checkers and those sort of things, so you know there's ways to do this if you have the possibility. Another problem is on-site displays. They may vary. Usually doctors just look at whatever display they have. It may not be calibrated. You could, of course, do that, and you could, of course, sort of adapt that to the system if you knew the characterization of the input and output devices, but as you don't, that sort of falls out as well. So, yeah. It's feasible, at least theoretically speaking, but practically challenging due to all these things that plays in. I'll just mention the conclusions that was drawn in this report. All the references are appended at the end, so it's possible to find this afterwards if you want to read it in more detail. So standardization is not critical, for example, in colonoscopy, the first technique I talked about, because there usually the vendor comes with everything in one rack, everything from the camera to the display is usually delivered in one thing, and then they have made sure that everything is okay. For pill cam, it's a different story, as we see, and it will probably continue to be so. It seems that those who make pill cams, they are more eager on making that work properly than looking into displays. They just make sure that their equipment produces what's needed. Standardization is also important, of course, if you have a video and you want to look at progressive diseases, because this can happen over several years, right? And then, you know, if you look at it in one display, you choose to look at it in another one, and, you know, colors may change. You may start to think that, or you maybe have done something some processing with it even to save space, which would be quite disastrous. It may be that when you or another doctor again looks at this, it looks differently and you're not able to read out the same sort of thing as you did earlier. So in that respect, it's also very important. And another thing is that it's currently not in demand. Usually what you'll hear is that the doctors, they complain if the colors are off, and then you have to do something about it until they're... And off usually means compared to what they're used to rather than being more exact. Of course, if you have no standard, you have more freedom in composing a system, but the problem is if you just go on and do something, it may be completely useless. So every time you make some changes, you have to check consistency with the doctors, and that's a very time-consuming process. So for me as a researcher, at least, it would be very nice to at least have some guidelines with certain thresholds that you would have to be within. You can use as some sort of pre-check under development, and then you can do the subjective testing in the end. That always has to be done at some point, but it's a bit of annoying to put doctors every time, as I'll explain later, because it's not easy to get hold of doctors, and they don't have much time, and you'll have to use 30 minutes to get some answers from them. And if you get 4 or 5 doctors, you're lucky. So you know, the statistics may be so-and-so.
Anyways.
To which extent nowadays is this new technology part of the doctor's education? So I assume the older generation doctors, that they are not used to these kind of new technology.
Commonly they learn colonoscopy, reading from those things. But there they can go in and look at everything. They're not they don't have to look at these crappy pictures from pill cams. But there are also people who are trained in this. As it is in hospital in Gjøvik, I think the doctors I dealt with there, they have assessed and they know it and they can tell whether something is right or wrong, but only one of them were experts on pill cam. That guy was not a young one, so I think someone has been doing this for quite a while. And it was interesting to see certain differences between them, the expert being maybe more... he was able to discover changes in images from processing that you wouldn't see, for example. But then again, for him, it didn't matter. Because he looked at, you know, is it possible to read something out of this image? So the image could be quite bad, actually, before he didn't see it. It was much a different story with the students that was more picky on everything they saw. So I'll get back to the subjective later. But I think it's getting more and more common part of any gastroenterologist to assess these sort of images. But yeah, you will have some that are expert and some that are not. But I'm surprised if everyone hasn't seen this or been through it in some way or other. That's not another slide on this, by the way. It's just a summary of a method of choice. As I already mentioned, the preference of using color depends on the habit of the doctors, but most of them are used to color, through color reconstructions. It is like only method that distorts color, even though the image gets clearer. In fact, if the colors are off-take, they usually don't want it. And of course, some techniques for through the narrow and other type of colors is not really that efficient because of the low resolution. This may, of course, change in time. So true color reconstruction is basically what you would emphasize on and what I'm emphasizing on and others are emphasizing on currently, at least in the state-of-the-art capsules. For future things, I mean, you could consider lots of different things there. And the validation must be at least today done by subjective testing, which I mentioned. But as I also said, if you have automatic pathology detection, you make that work in the future. You don't really need the doctors at all, except for the sort of overall conclusion. Of course, it's also important in general, because if you have dozens of patients every week, every video is at least 8 hours long, you have to sit and go through tons of images, which is pretty boring, to say the least. So, if you have a lot of pressure in one week and you have to look for a lot of videos, you may start to miss something. So, I think that it's, in this respect, it's very nice for the doctor to have a way of removing workload by doing automatic detection before, at least. However, the standard of these detection algorithms today is they're quite accurate, impressively so, but still not accurate enough to replace the doctor completely, so you need to have them to go in and assess it anyway. But I guess in the future this may change. And in that respect, you're not talking about consistency in subjective testing anymore, you're talking about what the algorithm is able to detect or not. And then I think the accuracy concept is getting much more interesting. I'll move on to processing techniques. Any questions to this before I move on? Anyways, anything is available on the documents you can find online. It's a reference at the end. Okay, so I'm going to talk about some research on this. First and foremost, I talk about something very fresh off the press. If you look at these two images, it's no doubt that the colors are pretty off in the pill cap, right? You would expect that the colonoscopy is much more exact in the reducing colors, and they are. I can confirm that. But this thing is pretty far from it, given that it's in a similar environment. It's much more dull, and there's a change in hue, definitely, also. But you're still able to see what you need. As I mentioned, the vendors are very secretive, so we don't know if this is intentional or not. Do they do this because they have to save so much processing that this is the best they can deliver? Or do they do this specific thing because, given this resolution, is this the best you can obtain when it comes to contrast? I, in a sense, doubt the last one, because we have been making some algorithms that is capable of actually crank this up quite a lot, keeping the same colors. But it may be that there's some research on that they figured out. This is the best way to go. Anyways, again, as I mentioned earlier, it's important to see that the set of colors here is pretty reduced from what you would see in a natural scene. And
when you process these images, you start to see that that's also how they are represented. Because if you try to use standard techniques in enhancing contrast, it goes wrong. And that makes sense, because if you try to enhance something based on the fact that a camera represents all colors, and it doesn't, then the result gets worse.
So this summer we actually had an exchange student here
that did a lot of work on this color correction, so I'll just mention it quickly. So this is pretty fresh out of the press, so it's not yet been evaluated by doctors, therefore the conclusion is a bit fuzzy, but anyways, we learned some things. Relating back to the color accuracy concept, you can in fact do something on that if you're able to capture color checkers with the camera. And since we had, we had 8 trials at the hospital where people with different diseases were swallowing these pills and their system was recorded. And we made sure that before each of these procedures, we took images of color checkers, so we had the possibility to do corrections in the future. Now, this was done in June 21. We started to work on this in July 22. So it took some time, but then it's also get back to the fact very useful to have this for any sort of research. But you can see here, even this is one of the better pictures, that if you know a standard color checker, you will see that these colors are not particularly well represented, so there's a lot of distortions here. But once you have this, you can put up a color correction matrix and then transform to what it should have been by moving the colors in the gamut to the right place. You know that these tiles are located.
But where in the system is that color checker being captured?
I mean, we basically take the camera and we put the color checker at a certain distance in front, fixed distance. So we just brought the black box down to the hospital to close out all the lights, and we put this on a rack that had a fixed distance, so we got the same distance. So, and then we did this again and again. Or I didn't, but a couple of PhD students.
And then later on we put the color check into liquid.
Yeah, that was a later thing, yes. I thought I may go in, I won't go into details on that today, because it's quite a lot to talk about, so I'll just show the results. But that was a different story, because this one was not in liquid, this was actually in open air, and that's why you see some of these spots here, it's static. So the normal pill sucks in some dust particles and you get this. But if you do it in water, you avoid that, which makes it easier to actually do the correction as well. But anyway, this student took this, made a color correction matrix, the original images over there, and he got this result when he corrected the colors, which you almost immediately can see, and I think also doctors would say that it's too much saturation. So it's much more reddish than what you would see in practice. So but the question is, what goes wrong? Because actually this should be better than it. But it goes back to the fact that the pill doesn't, and if you look at, if you analyze these patches, you will see that the camera doesn't really capture colors equally. So what was the next step then was to say that maybe we should just pick a subset of colors. And the student picked out the ones he thought he saw most of in the built-in images. So you see them numbered here, like brown, orange, skin color, you know, some reddish, yellowish, those sort of things. Cut out the green ones because you don't almost see them at all, except in some fluids, but you're not interested in that. And the grayscale. So that was one method. Another and more interesting method is what you just talked about, is that you took a bunch of colonoscopy images where you know what the colors should be, at least that's as good as we can do, and we sampled the colors in hundreds of images and put up the different colors in LAD space, and we also showed the circumference of the hole, which you usually see in human vision. You see there's quite a tiny subset of colors that are actually represented. And then instead of trying to correct for the whole gamut, we correct for this gut gamut, as we call it. So picked out
some samples inside this cloud and then put them on to a new sort of color checker, which I termed column checker, just to have a name for it from the data name, but anyways. So this should in principle then be better than just naively using the whole color checker and ideally also just pick colors that are there because they are not perfectly represented. But if you look at the results, now, of course, we did a lot of experimentation with this when you made the color checker. Well, I won't go into details on that today because I don't have time for it, but we tried this in air and we tried it in water and different things to see what worked out the best way. So there was a lot of experimentation going on. So here is the result then, man. You have the original off to the left. You have the one where we use all the 30 patches of the color checker to make the correction off to the right. Down here we have the color checker, the new color checker we made. And down here is just the selected patches of a standard color checker. 8 patches plus grayscale. And you can see that the two lower ones are more authentic. I mean, maybe it's not so easy to see when you're not used to do this. But the doctors, I think, would go for this. Unfortunately, we haven't put up that test, as I mentioned, so we haven't gotten a conclusion. But these are at least more what you would expect. But the surprising thing is actually the one where you pick out the patches seems to be, at least to me, to be the best one. So then there's another question. Maybe this gamut we made here is for colonoscopy. And for pill cans, this is even more reduced. So we make more distortions by actually doing what it should be in practice, right? Maybe not. These are just open questions. But there's things you can do, and there's lots of interesting things that you can do that goes on. It's not a problem that's been solved yet. And we're very interested in, because as I mentioned, doctors are used to seeing the ones up to the left. So although the colors are more authentic, some doctors may complain because they're not used to this. That's one problem. So you need to get a hold of doctors that are more eager in, you know, seeing what is the true colors rather than what they're used to. And that may also be a bit difficult. I think the ones who are working at the hospital, they're a lot involved in research and newer things, so they're eager on seeing this, and they may therefore probably give a more accurate evaluation than any general doctor would. But this is still sort of an unknown variable in the problem. Yeah.
I agree, color-wise.
Yes, and this is where
there
I want
any spots up there, you know, on the upper part of the original image, on this lighter part.
Yeah, yes, there is definitely something.
Like there is more, you know, it's a little bit more crispy or more details, whereas details then disappeared.
This is why I wonder that it's been intentional that they made the color this way in pill cams. Because perhaps they've chosen these sort of colors that are fake to get better contrast. But the question is, I don't think they have performed any contrast enhancement, because I will talk about some techniques so that now that actually gets these details further. Now we haven't, unfortunately, been had time to try this color correction on the contrast enhanced images. Because I think you would do this afterwards. You enhance the contrast, then you may do this. Or, you know, maybe it should be the other way around. Combination is not yet done.
What about in general sharpening? In general sharpening? Unsharp masking?
I'll go through some techniques that we have tried for this. There are some things that will work and others that won't, depending. But that's, I can get back to that.
What's the time, by the way? It's
11.
11, okay, so it's time for a break.
Yeah.
Okay, I can take a break. If there's any questions to the color correction, then we can take a break, and then I'll start with the enhancement after.
Okay, then we start again
10 past. Yeah, well, we can take quarter past. Is it? Or isn't it 15 minutes, isn't that?
15 minutes,
yeah.
That's good.
Okay.
ser jeg hadde klokke her likevel, og det står jo rett foran. Nei, det var jo klokke her, faktisk. Det står jo tellig, vet du. Ja.
Assuming that the monitor is calibrated beforehand,
these markers?
Markers?
Yeah.
Markers. Maybe I have one.
It's got to be close, so I haven't gotten them yet.
Yeah, I think that's what I thought.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
And thanks. Perhaps I have one more?
Oh, this is good.
It's just to, if I need to draw something, maybe.
Is it working?
Ah, that's it.
Yep.
Okay. A black one if you want.
Ah, red is fine. I can use it. Okay, so I'll continue. I'll go on and talk about the enhancement for these capsule endoscope images. Previously, I just talked about correction. Now I will not talk about correction at all. In fact, I will, in enhancement, when it comes to conserving colors, it's conserving the colors as in the image already, not trying to make them as realistic as possible. So, as we haven't tried to do both yet. So one standard way of doing contrast enhancement is to just use histogram equalization, which is to try to form a uniform tone distribution over either the luminance or the RGB components. So that's a very common technique for contrast enhancement. Problem is, just as with color correction, if you do that on naively on the RGB and they're not exactly reproducing all colors, then you will create lots of fake ones. So you have to take into account that you do process a subset of colors, or this subgamut, which we already saw on the previous slides. This one. So there's one approach here that from Wu et al., that is in Representative Reference 2, where they do histogram equalization on this subgamut. Now, the difference from what we did is that they constructed this gamut based on only PILCAM images, lots of them. And they got this gamut that you see there. So you've got, again, some sort of gastrointestinal color space, as they call it. And if you use histogram equalization on that, the result gets quite nice. So here's an example of pathology that is very hard to see in the original to the left here, because the contrast is so low. A trained doctor may see it. If you just do contrast enhancement by histogram equalization without taking the subgamut into account, you get a lot of weird colors that the doctors definitely wouldn't approve of, although you see the pathology better. But of course, the best one is the one to the right. When you run subjective tests, the conclusion is that they like the one to the right. And you can see the pathology much better, but you have colors about same as they were in the original. Problem by just doing histogram equalization is that you also enhance the noise, which is quite often a problem in these images. And there was a former PhD student here, who's now partially a researcher here at SINTEF now, which found a method that does those things simultaneously, both denoising and contrast enhancement. And the way he does this is to, I won't go into details because it's quite technical, but overall, overarching method is that you take the image you have, you divide it into subsets, so you have a small inner subset, which is shown by the inner circle here, and you have a larger outer subset, which is drawn in the other circle. They're not up to scale, but anyways, it's just to illustrate and not cram too much into a small space. So in the inner one, you try to denoise, and the most common way of denoising images is to do some sort of smoothing or filtering operation. Given the fact that from pixel to pixel in images, there's usually quite a lot of correlation. But in these capsule images, there's a lot of blood veins and other edges that you would like to keep. So you cannot just smoothen everything, because you would also smoothen important details. So you should also make sure that you keep the edges, and this you can do by so-called edge-aware smoothing or isotropic diffusions or, you know, whatever technique you would like to use. This guy particularly used random walk, as is shown here in the inner circle, and doing that, exploring differences in neighboring pixels. If the differences are small, you can, you know, usually safely smoothen. If you have very large changes, then that usually
tells you that you're close to an edge and then you don't move across that direction. This is said very simply. In the other circle, you just sample local lightness and darkness pixels and you use this to perform a contrast stretching on each pixel. So if you know the max and the means, you can easily stretch the contrast to the level you like.
And an important thing when it comes to color here
is that you don't want to to avoid tampering with the colors, you can do this on the luminance component in the image. I don't know if you know this, but you have a transformation going from RGB to luminance chrominance, which is shown to the right, which is basically just the lightness of the image plus the two chroma components. This is a very standard decomposition or a standard transformation you can do from RGB. So what he did was to do all the processing on the luminance and in any image, but also particularly in capsule images, the luminance image contains most of the energy. So whatever you do there is what you will see usually in practice. So this is just one way of keeping the colors the same. If you have a little granularity in the UNV components, it will usually not be that visible as long as you have taken care of the luminance. However, when you update your algorithm and do the optimizations, you need to use the color information for that. Otherwise, the result will be off. So this is how you sort of divide it. So if you look at the result of this method, this has been tested by doctors. You can see the original enhanced one, and it's no doubt that the enhanced image has much more visible features than the original one. But the colors are also quite the same. And interestingly, when you run the subjective tests this with the doctors, I won't give an example of that here, but another sort of test that was done similarly with this one, they would pick this one in most occasions, which is a good indication that you've done the right thing with whatever you try to achieve. So that was contrast enhancement. I'll move over to denoising, or this was actually a combination. Now I move to a purely denoising case where you have very nasty noise. Is there any questions for this? So, well, first and foremost, I will talk about this to actually show a very concrete example of a subjective test I've been involved in myself. But it's also important, this particular technique, for future high data rate capsule lenscopes. Because as I already mentioned, the data rate of a current pill cam is quite low, and you're transmitting in a rather narrow band in the megahertz range. But it's a well-known thing from information theory that you can crank up the rate quite a lot without actually using more energy if you exchange power with bandwidth. So if you have a very wide band, you can actually do with a small battery and get a much higher rate. Since this is not a communication theory lecture, I won't go into details on how you do this. I'll just mention the main things. Now, in the gigahertz range of the electromagnetic spectrum, you have a lot of available slots where you can now communicate. In fact, you can have bandwidths of up to 1 to 5 gigahertz if you're able to utilize it. The problem there is that the attenuation is quite low, and the attenuation as a function of frequency is also quite rapid, so you usually have to do with 500 megahertz to 1 gigahertz, but still, that's a lot. So it's been tested and shown that you can at least obtain 100 megabits per second on average, which is significantly higher than what you have today. But the problem is, as I said, the attenuation of the waves traveling through the body is much worse, so you get some much more severe errors than you do in the current state pill cams. But the point of all of this is to get better quality. That's the main reason. But it's not as easy as just using larger bandwidth. You have to do a lot. to obtain that. And how do you cope with these errors? Well, you could use something called channel coding. What that usually means is that you add something to your original data that you could use later to compute certain checksums. And if these checksums doesn't add up, you could either say that, well, something went wrong in transmission, or you can even use these ones to go back and correct certain errors. The problem with this is that you will have more computation at the encoder side, because you need to put up this extra data, right, that you have to append. But it's the most common way, and it's still in use, and you have to use it, right? It's really no way getting away from that. Another thing is retransmission of the whole image. That's very wasteful, so we would try to avoid that, because you know, if you have to do that often, then of course that will kill the battery. In very bad conditions, you just basically have to buffer up and transmit later, so I won't talk about that, because you can't really do anything about it. The thing we've been looking at is inpainting at the receiver. That's basically for free when it comes to battery usage in the field, because yeah, you don't need any extra processing there. You just utilize the fact that you have a lot of redundancy in the data you receive, and you can inpaint. But usually when you mention inpainting to the medical community, that's a no-no, right? Inpainting is creating false things, and that's the worst thing you can have. But you have to do inpainting in a careful way. And then it actually does work. But before you get the doctor's blessing, there's no way you're going to get accepted these results, because everybody will point at this and say, sorry, inpainting is bad. You know, we don't want it. And how can you do this? Well, first and foremost, you can use the fact that you're using any sort of denoising, is that between, if you blow up any part of the image, you will you know, depends on where it is, but in many places you will see that the changes from pixel to pixel can be quite small. And when you have that, you're able to, you know, denoise much more efficiently.
Another thing is that you have a sequence of images, often quite a, you know, of the same scene.
Not always, but quite so often you do. And if you do, you have the possibility to use neighboring images to inpaint whatever you have. Then you're not in painting something entirely out of the blue, which would be fake. But you're using original information.
So there's lots of error sources. I won't go into details on them. You may get these salt and pepper noise. Because the modulation methods you use when you transmit through a large band, when they go wrong, it's like old FM radio, if you remember that, you get this very harsh noise. But it's clear as a bell if you don't. And this is a bit the same thing you have to do when you transmit over a wide band, also in this application. And then you get these pretty nasty errors, which goes from very light to very dark, or the opposite way around. In a general signal, which may rapidly fluctuate, this may be very hard to remove. But for this sort of images, they're actually so different from everything else that you can remove them, thanks to the redundancy in the image. Another thing is that you may, in certain places, particularly if you go deep into the body and you have a long distance from the transmitter to the receiver, you may be in what you call an outage state, in which you may lose, you know, parts of an image or several lines or, you know, these sort of things. So how can you deal with this? Well, this case is actually very simple, because there's a well-known technique for salt and pepper noise called median filtering, where you compute a median of a certain block of pixels and you use that to represent the noisy, or to even out the noisy ones. And that almost works like magic in this case, because this is the original. And you have the very noisy one there, and you just use a simple median filter with the 5 times pixel grid, and it's basically removed quite nicely. You can see differences now that, of course, again, you get problem when you blow this up on a big screen that they look crappy anyway, but
you can see some differences, and doctors trained for pill cannulas, they could actually discern this quite easily. But then again, the other question is if they can use the image, right?
It's not perfect, but, you know, can they use it for clinical evaluation? Then it's fine.
Here's another example of an error that may occur in these channels when you look at wide bands. And these arrow blocks, which are just, you know, totally senseless in certain parts of the images. Or the colors may be very off, as you see in the top there.
But, I mean, this can also be copied quite easily, because at least as long as you have parts of the original frame, you have a possibility to try to estimate. Or you can even use the neighboring image here to do this. Estimate the movement from image to image and then correct for the different poses of the camera and then transform everything into the same coordinate system so that you get the same view from all angles. Then you can basically cut and paste from the neighboring image and insert the missing pieces. With some extra additional processing, because the lighting may not be the same in the two cases, but there are techniques, something called Poisson editing, for example, you could use to even that out. It's just see on the image to the right there.
Just to recap once again, so what is the reason that you might get these type of artifacts in just one of the frames and not in the second or the following one?
Well, sometimes, as I said, you can get this in several.
Okay, so it may
happen.
Difficult to...
I mean, you can't say in advance. It depends on the positioning of the camera with respect to the receiver, what sort of obstacles you have. For example, if you get an air pocket in between somewhere in the transmission range, you will get a lot of scattering.
Yeah.
And then if you see a signal being at this sort of power level, then suddenly it can just drop.
Okay.
And then, but it can drop and get up quite fast again, for example. And in this case, you will lose some, not everything. But sometimes it can be lying down here for quite some time, if this is the signal-to-noise ratio that you achieve. Here, the signal will drown in noise, right? Here, it will do for a little while and come back up. So there are just different scenarios. And other times, it will lie somewhere in between where you get a high density of errors, but you will still see something visible. Here, it's basically all gone. So, but this difficult case, I mean, you have to have some... mechanism for buffering in these areas where the reception gets very bad. And usually you could obtain that because you have feedback to the pill also from outside, or at least you have the possibility that, and then you may tell the pill that now I don't receive anything. But in these circumstances, it's really nothing else you can do.
So if you do this thing, you can actually get back to something quite decent even when you lack it.
Due to non-rigid lumens in the background, it won't be exactly the same, but it will have the same content. A tumor won't disappear, for example, because it's still there, but it may have changed slight shapes due to background lumens. But the results get pretty decent. And the important thing here is that all the processing here also is, again, done on the luminance to avoid disturbing the colors, right? The main denoising is done on the Y component, but you could use the same techniques also on each of the chromos separately, right? So, for example, here I calculated the transform for the luminance component, which has the most energy, which becomes the most accurate one. I use just the same transform in the colors because the camera still has the same flows in one image, and therefore same transform works for all of these.
Now, the most important thing, or maybe of this denoising technique, is rather how I tested that this impainting actually does work the way it should.
And that's an example of how you go about to conclude. Because one thing is looking at this picture and say, okay, they look nice. But, I mean, the doctors wouldn't care less if they can't use it for anything. So... I'll just talk a little bit about subjective testing. To get nice and stable statistics, you would like to have as many doctors as possible, or at least a lot of them, looking at these images. The problem is that
usually at any given hospital, you may have a few that does this, and those few may be quite heavily scheduled. So at most, you can get 30 minutes out of any of them. Right? Here at local hospital in Gjøvik, I mean, there's usually 3 people that does this. I was a bit lucky the month I did this because there was also 2 visitors, so I got someone from other hospitals. But, you know, and it took me about 1.5 to 2 months to complete the whole thing, to set up the experiment and schedule and blah, blah, blah. And, yeah, this can take longer time or shorter time if you're lucky. But you have to live with fewer people than you would in general subjective tests. That's just how it is. And the way we can sort of live with that is that if you get very consistent results, it's a good pinpoint, at least if these people come from somewhat different institutions that have some different customs. Of course, if the results are going everywhere, you have to do it again, and then it will take even more time, and so on and so forth. And in this particular experiment, we were lucky because all the 5 doctors that were of different expert, I mean, they had one was a student, one was an expert on pill camps, and the 3 others were, you know, used to evaluate pill cam images, but it wasn't their expert field. So, and 2 of them was from a different institution, which means that, you know, some diversity was also mixed into there. So we sort of concluded that, well, they're consistent, so it's a good indication. What are the tasks we asked them to do? Well, typically, I can just show how I put it up. So you will have the noisy one, you will have the reconstructed one, and the original just put up in random order. So of course the noisy one will always be easy to pick out. Which one is the noised and which one is the original may not be so easy to see. One can reveal it actually in this one, which is, anybody can see which is the original or not?
The right one is the original.
Mm-hmm.
The one in the middle?
The
one
in
the right.
The one to the right. Yes? So how did you see it?
Because there is a pixel in these 2 light points.
Yeah.
There's an extra pixel in the top that the other one doesn't have.
Yeah, that's a nice observation. So yeah, it's absolutely right. You have the little pictures before, probably.
No.
Oh, okay. So yeah, but that's
yeah.
Some will see it and some won't. The trained doctors will, but but then the question is how do they rate the quality of it compared to the original? Now, usually with pill cams, they're bad in the first place. So, but we ask them to basically instruct them to give a score from A to D, where A is the best and B is the worst. Of course, you have to instruct them very well what you mean, because we don't speak exactly the same language, so there's a lot of preparation going on from the documents you have to make. So you have to ask others who have done this before, and then you have to adapt while you do this, in a sense, because use less time on explaining them what to do will give you more time on showing them images. And it's important that they all answer with the same thing in mind, otherwise the results are not useful for anything. The other thing we of course have to ask a doctor for is this useful for inspection? Because if you do something with the image and it becomes useless, and then it's important that you do tell them that the original is there somewhere and the impainted one, and they will usually identify the noisy one. And then if the difference between them are bad in the sense that, as I mentioned, as I list here, when it comes to useful, it is that it should be clear enough to see what you need to see. You shouldn't have disturbing false artifacts that's been made by impainting, and you shouldn't, of course, have removed important things. And as you have both there, you can basically ask them to say if the difference between them are too big, then it's rather useless. But you also have to have them irrelevant category, because the doctors may actually find the image itself to be irrelevant, and that shouldn't penalize your algorithm, because that's a different problem, right? So we displayed this, and what we had usually time for was around 30 images, which is not a lot, but at least it's a representation of different noise types and corrections. And then we put up the results as histograms and mean opinion scores. And the scores are not that surprising, in a sense that the original gets the best score in most cases. I don't think it's in any case that the impainted one did it with someone with a trained eye. There was sometimes they were on par. But then again, they got a quite high score too, so in that sense, that's a good indication. Of course, the noisy ones then got very lousy, and then we basically show the trend we would like to see. But what is actually more surprising and interesting is that if you see the three bars here, you have the original top noise in the middle, impainted on the bottom, and you see the numbers, the percent of images being rendered useful, and not useful, and irrelevant. And interestingly enough, there's very little difference between the impainted category and the original ones, which means that although you do in painting, if you do it carefully, then the doctors are fine with it. So that's a bit of a surprise. But the data speaks, you know, it says what it says, so at least it's a good indication
that it can be done.
But also what I want with showing this is that it goes to see how difficult it is to deal with color consistency as the only means of doing something. Because every time you make some method for enhancement or denoising or whatever you do, you have to go through this whole procedure, which takes a lot of time and is difficult. And you have to use a lot of time and explain to doctors what they should and shouldn't do. And yeah, so that's back to the standardization I was talking about. It would be nice to have at least some sort of thresholds out there you could relate to, so you don't have to go and do this every time you do something new. The last thing I'll just mention is 3D reconstruction. I won't go into details on the 3D reconstruction itself. I'd rather link it back to some other things I talked about. But the main point about doing the 3D reconstruction is that it should be better for a doctor to look at the 3D model based on images rather than just looking at this image stream again and again and again, particularly in areas where they find something interesting. But there's a lot of challenges there as well. First one is what we already have heard about, the resolution and compressed artifacts and those sort of things, the low frame rate. But also, non-rigid movement in the background over time is very difficult for this. But in the future, you can assume that you get better quality, and you know, having a framework there is nice. We have already done quite some experience with this and made some progress. That is quite interesting. But it's not really the topic of this lecture, so I will relate it to the color. I won't go into details on the method, but all I say is it can be done. So usually, what you do, you have the image. You try to figure out what the 3D model is by computing this height map. And then you wrap the texture on top afterwards. So this is very quickly set how it can be done. This is a single image technique, which is described in another paper I appended. But the point is that for any given pixel image, you try to figure out what the depth of the scene is in that particular point, using information about how light is bouncing off the surface you're dealing with. So you have to find the surface model that you're dealing with, and then you can say more about the depth. By particularly if you have a point light in the camera, as you do have in the field cam, you know that a point light will, an ideal point light, the energy will be distributed on spherical shells, which means that the further you're away, the less strong the light is. So you have this well-known 1 over r squared, where r is sort of like the radius of this sphere, or the distance to the object takeoff. And this you could use to actually say how deep you are, if you know what the surface is like, what the normals are, and how the light is bouncing off it. So you can actually do this for only one image. But the problem is, and the main thing I want to talk about, is if you get the 3D model, then this uneven lighting gets really, really artificial. And that's one problem we like to cope with. We haven't really gotten to any method until lately, so unfortunately I don't have the corrected results. But one method that seems to work quite nicely for this is if you think about the model of let's just take a diffuse surface for now, then usually the reflected radiance is whatever the light source sends out times the albedo of the surface, which is a function of x, y, usually. And then you have this cosine theta, which is the if you have the light source over here, and you have the object over here, then this object will have a normal vector, and then the light will have a certain path, and the angle between these two will depend on, of course, how bright it is. If the normal and this light path is parallel, then you get most light, and if they're at right angles, you get nothing. Right? So this is this can be used to both find the depth, but also to it will also, that's what creates the variation in the image. And then, of course, you have the r squared takeoff, which is the distance here. Now, how can you make the light appear even? Well, we know that r is equal to the square root of x, y, and c. And x, y is basically given in your pixel grid. C is the depth you have. So if you found the depth model from 3D, and if this model is exact, all you need to do is basically multiply with the r square estimate, and then you get back to an even lighting. But of course, it depends on how accurate the 3D model is. So if that's very accurate, you get a very nice result. If it's not accurate, you don't get it, and then you have to use other things. And this also relates back to the original, as we talked about, when you need to identify the imaging chain. The first problem you have is this non-even lighting, which tampers with the colors already. But if you have a good enough depth model, you can actually find out what that should be. So it will also help for other things if you can do this.
I think that's what I would say about 3D for now, as this is not really the topic of the lecture, but it relates back to something that's important in that respect. So, it's a possibility. So any questions about this?
Okay, I will just wrap up, and hopefully you have gotten some information from me today. As I mentioned, color is, I hope that's become clear, that is important in endoscopic investigation. There's currently no standardization of color or color transmission for endoscopy systems, although it would be nice to have it, but there's a lot of problems now that makes it difficult. Preserving true color is important, or true, I say, I mean, as we've seen, it's not necessarily true, but at least the color level is there when you do any sort of processing. Problem today is that you have to always carry out, or it's not a problem. I mean, for any medical application, in the end, you have to do a subjective test, but the problem is that for anything you do, you need to sort of get it checked if it should have any meaning at all. So, relating back to the standardization framework would also be nice to have from this sort of perspective. As I say, nice with some standardization guidelines that could be applied as some sort of pre-assessment before you do the subjective test in the end. And of course, I could also mention here that in the future, that's also quite interesting. So another part of a project I'm involved in is actually about automatic pathology detection using deep learning. And it's interesting what you can do with it, and that will probably improve in the future, and then you know, it may be other criteria that you may need to evaluate to get the detection as good as possible than, you know, what we do here when the doctors are looking at the same sort of images. So there's some references at the end. This will be available, or?
Sure. As soon as you provide me the slide.
Yeah, I can do that. So
this is reading material for those who are interested.
Sure.
So, yeah. I think that's what I had to say now. So
that's it.
Okay.
Thanks for your time.
Questions? No questions?
Yeah.
When I was generating the depth map for the 3D, do you experience flickering between the frames?
This particular technique that I showed here is for just one image.
Okay.
What we use in, if you have multiple images, is structure for motion. But you mean flickering between...
Like where the depth will inverse or something like that?
Oh, no. I mean, if you use what is called standard shape from shading... which is actually using the surface properties in a single image, you can get this convex-concave problem. But if you also... The fact that you have a light source that's point-blank, you can avoid that, because you always... So that helps you in that respect. When it comes to multiple images, if you use the projective geometry of the scene, you're usually... you're capable of actually removing that ambiguity due to consistency of the geometry itself. Because if you see a scene from two different angles, or at least if you have three different angles, that should be enough for you to single out where the point is lying under ideal circumstances, right? And then that couldn't be flipped the other way around due to just the geometry itself. So it's shown that you can actually get a Euclidean reconstruction of the scene if you have two or more images under certain circumstances. But I guess some 3D techniques that doesn't take it into account may actually, or if you use, for example, the shape from shading I mentioned in several images, you may have that problem.
Yeah.
But I think if in this particular case, if you utilize the physics you have, you should be able to avoid it.
Okay, thanks.
Any other
Perhaps some of the students may get back to you later on.
Sure, no problem. Yeah.
To verify some other topics or.
Yeah.
Okay, there are no further questions. Thanks, Baldish. Excellent. And I will upload the lecture notes as soon as I get them. Yes? Then we continue quarter past one, so we stick to medical. Then we will have two PhD students talk about medical visualization and geometric modeling for surgical planning, medical spectral imaging. So see you quarter past one.
Nei, det er vel sånn fredags. Så jeg tror de kutta ut. Det er vel sånn at de ukene det sånn color talk, så det vel ikke color lunch og vice versa.
thought, okay, maybe you need to create a kind of a cupboard.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? So if you
make some cupboard, but you can have some big idea. For example, if I'm just placing these two there together, then suddenly I'm covering this tree up, and I'm just trying to observe these two. So.
Yeah, if you have only one, then not able to come up with another idea, then, I mean, it will be a kind of practical issues, you know, to have the viewing booth, and then...
And also I have to make all the changes in front of the observer, which will not be good.
Yeah, I mean, this is a coursework,
okay.
You know, it's not a final thesis, so what you need to do then... You need to describe exactly how you have done it and the reason why you have to do it this way. And then, of course, talking about the results, then it bounces back again, you know, that there has been some noise, you know, generated due to some practical issues. So you have to be a kind of creative, you know, in finding a solution. Probably you can obtain some observer information, but of course it's not idle. But that is what you have, and then you have to cope with it. And then it's important, you know, to have that in the discussion part, that these physical constraints probably has affected the observer's judgment. But yeah, if there is only, you know, one piece that you have available, then you have to find a kind of a workaround, you know, how can I present all the pairs? So you're talking about, is this a pair or is this and this a pair?
This
you know what I mean?
Yes.
To me, it looks like a box.
Yes.
Okay.
So this is like a slope, and there's nothing on the bottom bar, so that's why it's 2.5D printed.
Right, okay.
And is it possible to like print a new object? I mean, though this is just a coursework, but as we have a printer, I mean, because
I don't know where that is printed. Tonsimar, she was always talking in Germany, or it was done by Canon, or in France.
Okay.
Yeah, of course, that would be the quick question to ask. Whether it would be possible to reproduce that in our, we do have a 3D printer. I'm not in charge of that, but who is in charge? You could write an email to the lab engineer. This Markus Stureide. You know Markus?
Probably during our first week there was an introduction.
Markus Stureide. Markus. You could send him now an email asking, also just that you are a COSI student and you have a question whether it would be possible very quickly to produce some 3D items. And who is in charge? And then you could copy that to Tanzima.
Mm-hmm.
So if Tanzima has the file, you know that there is probably a kind of a map.
Yes.
Or you know a file. And I don't know whether that file is compatible with our system. But there was a reason why Tanzima has been printed these outside. But that is to ask. And then the answer will be yes, we can do it, or no, we cannot do it.
Can you tell me his full name? I mean, I think I found someone else. It's not him.
No, it's not him. It's
Markus.
Markus.
Because he's cleaning, he's in charge of cleaning the 3D printer every week, so he knows who. Marcus. Marcus. Don't want to have teams. Ah, oh, gosh. Yes, that's him. That's him. Yeah, okay.
Thank you so much.
Him. That's him.
Yes, I will send him. Yes.
Okay.
It was in the introduction to Color Lab on our first week.
Right. So, yeah, just write him an email asking about whether it is possible that you have the file, do you?
No, not yet.
Okay. But
if it's possible to print, if it's possible to use the printer for printing them, then I will ask them.
Oh, yeah. And you can, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So is it physically, is it that big?
Yeah, this is small, this size.
Oh, then these patches are very small.
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
So this is flat, but these are like 2.5 to print.
Okay. So how wide is that from there to there? Just 5 centimeters?
From this side, it is like from here to here.
Ah, okay, long. Okay. So one part, this blue part, is then about this size.
This size, yes. It's tiny
oh,
size.
Okay, okay. Yeah, then.
Also, this is from the sample paper. These are also like 4 centimeters.
Yeah, yeah. So these they look familiar to me. You know that.
Yeah,
that
this
these
is from
balls from David.
This paper.
David.
This paper.
David. Where is David?
No, it's not
David.
Him.
But
this is very small. Like
okay.
This size, and if I mean.
So you have these balls, the no, physical. No.
I don't have them. These are from other papers.
Ah, okay. But you are just referring to this.
Yes.
Ah,
and
okay,
we
so
have these.
Yeah.
And I was just
saying
it's one of the challenges because I have to put these samples like this, but they are
printed
together.
I see. Okay. Okay.
Yes.
And you're going to use the
grade
scale.
Yes.
Do you have that?
Not yet.
You're going to generate it.
I mean, I haven't think about it yet.
Ah, okay, okay.
I have just started planning from this week.
Okay. No, but then that's the very first thing to do, to ask whether it is possible. If the answer is no, then you have to be creative,
yes.
You know.
Okay.
Then the next question would be to Tansima, is it possible to cut?
No, it's not. I mean, she doesn't want to cut it, so she actually recommended to use cardboard to cover other parts.
Ah, okay, okay, right. Okay, okay. No, but ask whether it is possible to print.
Mm-hmm.
And just give a kind of, you can send in that image, you know, and say, okay, the length is approximately 30 centimeters and blah, blah, blah,
mm-hmm.
so that he has an idea.
And also, if it's...
Because it doesn't have to be exactly the same, isn't it?
Yes, and if it's possible to use the printer, I don't have to use this shape. I mean, the other papers have actually...
Other
papers have actually used like these samples. They have spheres
balls
or cones or cylinders like this. So if it's possible to use the printer, we can just print anything.
Okay.
It has to be just very small, but different color patches.
Okay. No, then...
I will ask them. Thank you.
Well, so if you send it now, then you have an answer very soon.
Okay, I will.
Okay? Yes.
So I emailed you regarding my project this morning about the estimation of measurement.
So, I have another idea for you.
I wanted to like integrate a camera as well, like one as one of the measurement devices. So, using the camera, I have to characterize the camera using some spectrophotometer as well, right?
Yeah, it is very much dependent on the